are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to your favorite day of the week. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Adam Mattis. Today's show is brought to you by CBDMD. Getting a good night's sleep can be much easier said than done, but don't worry because our good friends at CBDMD have exactly what you need to get the sleep you deserve. CBDPM blends melatonin and other self-promoting ingredients with 500 milligrams of high-quality CBD to create a powerful and effective sleep aid. And to make it even easier to get your year started off right, they're offering all our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code NBA at checkout. Once again, that is CBDMD.com, promo code NBA for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD products from CBDMD. Adam, I think the Lakers had a bunch of CBD in their system for this game.
Well, you know, CBD is not so psychoactive, Anthony. You come from a place you don't all the full benefits.
No, they look sleepy. They look sleepy, not high.
It's the other stuff that's in there, the chamomile that makes it sleepy. Anyway, I don't begrudge you for not being as well versed in CBD.
Something's up with Colorado. The Lakers is all I'm saying.
They might have THC in their system, Anthony.
They have too much THT in their system.
THT, look at what people listen to what I'm dealing with. I can't educate this guy. No, I mean, I think the Lakers were just really lacking a full dose of everything. Anthony Davis. And you know, if they could find a way to get some Anthony Davis back, I think they'll be good again. That's my prediction. But I do predict that when they're going to be short him, did I say this on last week's show, or have I just been texting it to you nonstop since he went down?
Well, we were laughing because you like to take the victory lap on both sides of this coin, where the Lakers don't look as good with Anthony Davis, and then
no. Also, I never said they don't look as good with Anthony Davis.
No, without Anthony Davis.
Oh yes, absolutely. I did say that.
Yeah, you said that they were going to be bad without Anthony Davis, but right. Also LeBron isn't lifting a mediocre roster when Anthony Davis sleepwalks. So it's a weird dynamic that your analysis has taken on this year.
I don't understand where I'm at, but I do. But this game was interesting though. And I'm just trying to keep it moving here. This game was interesting though, because it was, I thought, and tell me what you think, but I thought this was a total domination from Brooklyn. Brooklyn, of course, missing Kevin Durant. Lakers, of course, missing Anthony Davis. And you can't get a real read on these two teams without those guys, because they're obviously enormous. The teams are completely different with them. But this was a game where the only question throughout most of the game was whether or not the Lakers were going to lose by 10 or 20, because the Nets kept getting up 20, giving up a little bit of a lead, get back up 20 very, very quickly. And it just was kind of a dominant performance.
Tonight's show, as per usual, we're going to take you guys on a tour of the games that took place Thursday night. Second segment, we are going to discuss the All-Star starters that were announced. And then in the third segment, Adam's latest power rankings are going to take you through the game's best artists. And he has a super scientific method as to how he's defining who is an artist, a scientist, and a force of nature, right?
Yeah,
that was the three words that you were using.
I think a force, but yeah.
So that's the plan for the show. Let's actually just dive, since we were talking about it anyway, the Lakers lose to the Brooklyn Nets 109-98. The Nets were playing without Kevin Durant. Lakers were playing without Anthony Davis and Dennis Schroeder. And the Lakers, once again, you know, the games that they've played without Anthony Davis, they just really struggle to get stops. And, you know, it's funny. I think this roster in general is better than it was last year, but it is way worse equipped to deal with an Anthony Davis absence. They don't have anybody who can defend the rim. They don't have any long athleticism in the front court, and it just continues to show up in the worst of ways. And now that, you know, the Lakers are about 5 days removed, we have about 5 days before the Lakers are capable of adding somebody to their roster in that 15 spot, I think they're really going to have to look to find somebody, now that we're getting note from the Lakers that Anthony Davis is probably going to miss another 4 weeks or so.
Right. Yeah, I think there's no doubt. I mean, you've been hammering this, I know, on your show and just in us talking, but they really don't have anybody to protect the rim. Last year, you had a lot of bigs. You had Dwight Howard that could step in. You had JaVale McGee that could step in and do that same role. But with Anthony Davis, he does so many things. You would never replace Anthony Davis. But rim protection is a very important part of basketball, and taking that out and not having a single player that really can do that, you know, obviously changes the game. So I do, you know, I don't worry about the Lakers, because unless Anthony Davis just doesn't return, which that's, or LeBron James goes out or whatever, as long as those guys are healthy for a playoff run, I still think they're the best team in the Western Conference. And I think that given even just a couple weeks to prepare for the playoffs, they'll be fine. But over this stretch, I would not be surprised. In fact, I would even predict that the Lakers are going to struggle, maybe more than the average person seems to think. I think they fall in the standings a little bit over these next couple weeks.
I absolutely do. I think so as well. Just you cover the Nuggets, and I think there's a parallel line of thought here, right? The Nuggets have kind of fallen off, and I think not having Jeremy Grant has been a bit of a hit, but also not having Plumlee, you know, just who's coming off their bench to defend the rim when Jokic goes out.
I honestly, that hasn't been as much of a problem, although Mason Plumlee, getting his shouts to him. He got his first triple double this week of his career. He's been so close so many times. So kind of cool to see him get that, but I don't, it's not that Jokic hasn't had Jamal Murray.
I just mean in general, like in terms of building a team, like if you don't have somebody and if at for stretches of the game, nobody is standing in front of your rim to deter anybody from getting there, eventually that's going to take its toll. I agree with you about Murray. I'm not disagreeing with you at all.
Well, I just think
the Lakers are specifically dealing with this because they usually have somebody who's really, really good at that, and now they have nobody.
Well, the Lakers roster construction is that they have two players that are just so hyper elite that they really cover all bases with two guys. And then you got a bunch of very high level role players that are good at one thing. And when you have both guys, you allow all those role players to only have to do the things that they're good at. Like they get to be in their roles comfortably and do their thing. You take out one of those two pieces, and all of a sudden now we need a little more rim protection from you, Montrez. Can you provide it? No. You know, we need a little bit more perimeter containment from you out there, Kyle Kuzma. Can you provide it? Maybe not. So all of a sudden, all those role players have to do a little bit more, and that's why I think they're going to struggle. But again, that's basketball, and it's especially – the personality of the season. That's the phrasing I've been using now. George Karl said it to me, and now I'm saying it just makes so much sense. This season has a personality to it, and that personality is a little bit of a randomness, a little bit of chaos. I mean, you look at the teams. There was one point we thought the Milwaukee Bucks, oh, number one seed again, just chalk them up. They've lost five in a row. The Raptors and Heat, oh, they're terrible. They're not the team they were. Now they're both on a little bit of a roll here. The personality of this season, I think, is just going to be teams are going to look wildly different one month to the next. And some of that is COVID. Some of that is the shortened time frame. Some of that is the shortened turnaround for teams just to kind of – I mean, think about this, Anthony. One thing people aren't talking about, these guys, when they're on the road, not all going out to dinner for team dinners. Some guys are getting together, but you think about how important it is for a team to have a team get together. Hey, we need a team outing tonight. We're going to go do karaoke or play golf or something. Teams aren't having the opportunity to do that. And I really think it makes for the camaraderie, the chemistry, and all those things to be a little bit more fragile. And you're seeing that with these streaks teams are going on, wins and losses.
I have 2 points before we move on to the next game here. One, your next power ranking is going to be which team is the best at karaoke. Two, I think it's absolutely insane that the NBA has yet to expand rosters this year. I think it's bananas to me, given what they were asking some of these teams to go through, given everything that we're going through because of the games being postponed and the health and safety protocols. It's insane to me that the NBA was just expecting everybody to get through this with 15-man rosters and the hard cap. It's wild to me.
Let me just say shouts to Joe Harris. It'd be a shame if we got through the segment without just at least mentioning him. So shouts to Joe Harris, 7 of 10 tonight from the field. He's crazy good when you can't leave the main actors on the court, and Kyrie and James Harden.
One of the fastest and cleanest releases I've ever seen in the sport.
Gorgeous shooter, man. Gorgeous.
Such a beautiful stroke. All right. Next game here on the slate was the Toronto Raptors. The next TNT game here was the Toronto Raptors taking down the Milwaukee Bucks. Adam, can I just ask you an honest question? And I don't mean to be completely reductionist on this.
Oh, God. I mean, you're about to be very reductionist, but let's hear it.
Why the hell aren't the Bucks using Giannis more as a screener in the pick and roll? Like, what are we doing here? He can't shoot. He's not like he doesn't have Kevin Durant or LeBron's handle. Yeah. Like, what are we doing here? Is it just his own, you know, his request to play like that, or what's going on? It's maddening to watch them play.
You know, this is going to sound, I always hate talking about, you know, anybody's job and saying like, okay, now it's time to start questioning it. And the Milwaukee Bucks still, you know, still a good team, you know, still a team that has plenty of time. We talked about the personality of the season. They're in a lull. They're 16-3. They've lost 5 games in a row. We'll talk about that in a second.
16-13.
But yeah, what did I say? Either way. 16-3. That's a little different. But I do wonder, whenever a team has been together, core pieces have been together. I know they had Drew Holiday, but anytime you have core pieces together and the identity of the team stays the same, you always run the risk of things getting stale. And I wonder if with them, things have gotten a little stale. There's not enough creativity and not enough difference year to year in a way that usually has helped them. That's why they've had those giant point differentials. That's why they've had hot starts and great records. But I wonder, there's a tipping point where that becomes, you know, we just do the same thing. We've been doing it for 5 years and we win the same way for 5 years, lose the same way. You start to lose faith in it. And when I watch Milwaukee, that's what I see. A team that needs a shakeup in some major way. That's not just Drew Holiday.
Middleton for Beal, make it happen.
That's your change, huh?
I mean,
I think I saw a lot of people talking even about the coaching staff and the coaching shakeup. I mean, you talk about why don't
I was
they
surprised
do some...
he brought him back for this season in the first place.
Well,
I was really surprised. You only get
he's a great coach, though. This is the thing is
he's a great regular season coach. We got to start making that distinction.
Okay. Maybe. But here's I think a more apt point on this is that, you know, there's great players, Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, both great players, maybe not the perfect two to put side by side. And we've seen this over, you know, how many years, like two players can be great, but not great fits. And I wonder if Budenholzer is also just expired in Milwaukee and maybe it's time to go on. It could be something else to your point. It could be a shakeup of Bradley. I think Chris Middleton is a phenomenal player and more fits what they're doing, but who knows? To me, they look stale in a way that I would be a little concerned if I was Milwaukee.
Also want to give my shouts to the Toronto Raptors in this one. They did win the game. Don't want to spend the whole segment here talking about what's up with the Bucks, but Norman Powell goes for 29 points, yep. 4 rebounds, 3 assists, the Toronto Raptors are for stretches of the season, right? How many times have we come on this show and asked like, hey, when is Toronto really going to start turning it around? They're now at 14-15. And are staring down some of those spots in the playoff picture. Right. And you know what? Shouts to them for them really kind of, you know, not making any knee-jerk reactions to the roster or anything with the culture or anything like that. They just recognized that eventually they were going to turn things around. They did. And now they're looking like one of those teams that if you're at the top of those playoff standings, you really don't want to see stick around in the bottom of them.
Well, I think Toronto's going to be at the top of those standings. Not the tippy top, but I don't think they're climbing. I mean, you look at their losses.
But like,
I wouldn't be a first.
I wouldn't want to be the number one seed and then see Toronto at like the 4 or 5.
Yeah. I agree. They're going to be tough. Although, who do you want to see? You know, I mean, Philadelphia, yeah, Brooklyn, right. They all look a little scary. But, you know, Norman Powell, you brought him up. He started the last 13 games. Raptors 8-5 in those games. He's averaging over 22 points a game on 50-40, almost 90 splits. You know, that again, that's a team that was there last year, a little bit of a change here, and all of a sudden you find some new mojo. And I just think that a lot of teams that balance between continuity and getting a shakeup, it's razor thin. But shouts to them, they look fantastic. They're on a little bit of a run here. As I mentioned, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, winning 7 of their last 10. You know, they're starting to get it together.
Yep. All right, last game we're going to talk about here, other game of the night, is the Miami Heat beating the Sacramento Kings 118-110. Miami was way out in front in this one, at some points being up 20. Tyler Hero kind of gets back on track here, 27 points, 4 boards, 3 assists. And, you know, it's a big – every win, I think, at this point is kind of big for Miami. They need to start tallying wins because they're at this weird no man's land where – do we play out the season and see how things go the rest of the year? Or do we try to make some kind of swing with depreciated assets to try to turn this or save this season? I personally think their only path forward is to stay the course and hope that things turn around. But
Miami?
Yeah.
Good, because there's no way they're ever giving, especially in a season in which you have a play in, like you only need to be the 10 seed and
yeah.
Pat Riley's never going to give up on that dream. But even beyond that, I mean, we have talked and last you talked, you get to take a little victory lap on this. You were slandering the Eastern Conference and really it's starting to look a lot like those bottom half teams are just, they're starting to fall off a little.
I would take a victory lap, but I didn't stretch today, and I don't want to pull a hammy.
I think Miami would be fine. They had a little hiccup here, losing to Utah, Lakers, and Golden State all in a row. You know, good games, but that's three very, very tough. That's a tough West Coast swing, and they're not even. I guess they're a little more than halfway through this trip. They've got the Lakers and Oklahoma City on deck before they head home. That was the toughest part of their schedule, and I think, you know, starting at the end of February and really going for until the All-Star break, they have a chance to really make up some ground. And I think their season will be made or break, you know, in that stretch.
Hope so. All right. That's going to do it for these games from tonight. In the second segment here, we're going to talk about the All-Stars starters that were announced, who we thought were snubs, who we snubbed. Think anytime we have a snub, you think somebody else should not have been amongst those starters. And Dallas fans, you're not going to want to listen. Let's come back to that here in a second. We're covering everything you need to know about the NBA, but what about the rest of the sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered with there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. Today's show is also brought to you in part by BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but NBA, college basketball, and the NHL in full swing. MLB is right around the corner as well. BetOnline even covers the awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Do you watch MTV The Challenge, Adam?
No.
It doesn't really surprise me. We're real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website at betonline.ag or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit if you use the promo code LOCKEDON. So one more time, that is betonline.ag, promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your sports online sportsbook experts. All right, Adam. So the All-Stars were announced, and the captains are LeBron James and Kevin Durant. Were you surprised at all that Kevin led the Eastern Conference?
No. I mean, he's been one
like
of
for things- votes, fan votes, and all that stuff. Like, not in terms of like caliber of play, because I agree with you. But like given you know the turn that PR wise his career has taken, were you surprised that he was still the top vote getter?
I've been thinking about this a lot, actually, Anthony, and you know, I wasn't always the biggest Kevin Durant fan, and I didn't always understand the method to his madness. It's weird for me personally over the last year or two, how I've evolved to be a lot more just intrigued by him and his, and some of his personality quirks and his thorniness to fans and media and what have you. And I wonder, I always think if I'm feeling or thinking something, I can't be the only one on earth. So I wonder if fans are just coming around a little bit more towards guys like him and Kyrie, who have maybe been just a little bit different than your polished, you know, buttoned up type of superstar. And I wonder if people are coming around to it. I don't know, but you know, on top of that, he's looked really good at moments this season, some of the best basketball of his career. So I'm not too surprised.
Yeah. I actually really agree with that point about the not polishedness about it.
Right.
Like, look at the Western Conference and how far behind all the top vote getters that Paul George was this year, for example. And Paul George is this guy that I don't want to say that he's not genuine.
Oh, he puts his foot in his mouth. It's not about genuineness. He always has to put his foot in his mouth.
Right. Well, one of my favorite things to do in covering the league in the way that we did especially when Paul George was potentially going to be a Laker, is I would go back and I would talk to people who covered him with the Pacers, and I would go back and I would talk to people who covered him with the Thunder and then now with the Clippers, and like their favorite kind of inner circle hashtag was Paul George saying things, right?
Right.
And he just says the kind of thing that he thinks will win him that room, but doesn't really recognize that what he says in that room is going to go beyond that room.
Right.
And I think while KD has said, and especially, you know, done things in terms of like the choices he's made and, you know, going to the Golden State in the first place that might rub people the wrong way. He is very much Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
And F you if you don't like it, kind right. of, sort of. And you know, I think at this stage, the more and more that I think about it, I appreciate that about Kevin Durant more than I do Paul George doing like the opposite of that.
Yeah. I think a lot of people just kind of have enjoyed that, and I think gain new perspective too about athletes and their relationship to the fans and in the 21st century and some of those things. So, you know, LeBron has, it's great. I think that him and LeBron are squaring off against each other, not just because I think, in my opinion, they're probably the two best players in the NBA. Mm-hmm. But also, and they play similar position and get to go against each other and are both fighting for that title.
It really does feel like the actual vibe that we were supposed to get with yeah. this concept, right? The two best dudes on the playground is going to go out and pick their teams. It's great.
Like LeBron and Giannis didn't ever feel like LeBron and Curry. So I think LeBron and KD, it finally feels like, okay, I like this. This is a, mm-hmm. you know, this is a good schoolyard pick 'em. But, you know, LeBron's very polished. He's very like, I think always aware of how things are received and has so much control over the narrative about himself and this or that. And I think KD so like doesn't in a way that I think people maybe just kind of, he becomes a perfect balance to LeBron in that way and that people appreciate. But I mean, this, we're playing pop psychology on the general population of the world right now.
yeah.
But the lists are right. fun though. The All-Star list is fun.
All right. So the list that we have right now, so you have the top vote getters in the front court for the West, LeBron, Jokic, yeah. and Kawhi Leonard. In the back court in the West, Steph Curry, Luka, right? Dame.
I already see one I don't like, but all right, let's keep going.
Well, Dame and Anthony Davis wind up being the first players left out of the starting lineup in the West. And then in the East, you have Kevin Durant, Giannis, and Joel Embiid in the front court. And then you have Bradley Beal and Kyrie Irving being in the backcourt in that Eastern yeah. Conference. So you sound like you're ready to jump ready. Off and pop off about this the snub that you're talking about. Don't I you think you and it? I are going to huh?
I always love it. The snubs. Well, snubbed?
The only thing is snub is a fun word, right?
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
It's kind of like, you know, I don't know. Anyway. But the player that I think you and I both agree on, who is the first snub and the biggest snub, loudest snub of all of the All-Star selections, is probably Damian Lillard, right?
I think easily, and he's really had a great, you know, like a couple weeks. I mean, he's had a great year, but he's had a great couple weeks in that, you know, his team. Myself, I was the first last week we did this where I told you I don't understand it. This Portland team keeps winning. and they continue to win.
It's become a bit like every time I have to talk about Portland on Locked On Lakers, I always make a joke about how frustrated this Portland team makes you.
They do, but I have to respect it too. Like, it's,
yeah,
look, you have to. I'm by no means trying to take it away from them. They keep winning. So, and now what are they on a win streak here? Six in a row. And over that span, Damian Lillard's points, 43, 31, 34. He's got a 30 in there, 36. I mean, he just continues to do this, you know, put up big numbers, come up clutch. So if you ask me who's a better player, Luka or Damian Lillard, I would say Damian Lillard. Or I'm sorry, I'd say Luka, because I think Luka is a better player. But we talk about All-Star. What has the person done? It's close. I do think it's weird to say snub, because I really don't. I really do think we put too much emphasis on individuals when it's a team game. But at the same time, Lillard has played some inspiring basketball over the last two or three weeks. And it would feel to me, maybe not rationally, but it would feel a little bit better if he was in.
Just in terms of the entertainment value, if you had to choose, like, you know, one guy for this game, who would you rather have, Luka or Dame? All things being equal.
I think it's easily Dame, because Luka, as great as he is, you've already got LeBron as your lead ball handler. You know, so I don't know that this game needs a Luka, what Luka provides most. Dame, on the other hand, you know, he's going to be able to shoot off the bounce, take it all. I mean, so I'd probably say Dame.
Over under 1.5 passes that Damian Lillard throws when he gets into the game.
Over. I mean, he does so many. Here's what's tough about it though. Actually,
he's going to be gunning for MVP. Like, this is maybe, the most, maybe, I think rightly maybe. Angry. I don't think anybody's been about
oh
this
no,
game.
Man. I don't think anybody's gunning for the MVP. This is the sad thing. Like,
this is the, a different topic, but yeah.
But it's the fine. Same topic, though. But here's the thing, though, that I think, especially when you look at these teams. Okay, Jokic versus Embiid. Well, that's a great matchup. Everybody, anytime you see any post on Twitter about Jokic or Embiid, all or just not even a post about, say, Embiid with the basket, somebody in the comments, Jokic better. Same thing for Jokic. So you put those guys against each other. That's a great matchup. Giannis and LeBron, or I'm sorry, Giannis and Kawhi, great matchup. Really great mm-hmm. matchup. Two phenomenal defenders. LeBron and KD, the best matchup. You don't get better than that. if you get to the other side, Bradley Beal and, Bradley Beal, Kyrie Irving versus Steph and Dame, like that's another great matchup. But I know it's schoolyard pick style, but throwing Luka in there, now Luka has to match up with one of Steph, Kyrie, or Bill. That's not a matchup that you naturally put together. If you had Dame in there, I just feel like you would have five great one-on-one matchups that would make for a really fun all-star game.
I'd feel a lot better about Luka being an all-star if you played any defense whatsoever.
Oh, man, you're just going to keep tripling down, just tripling down on it. Wow. Remember, that's Anthony Irwin, everybody, Dallas fans. That's not Adam Mattis. That's Anthony Irwin.
At HM Fagan on Twitter. Come at me, bro. all right, last thing before we get out of here, because you kind of alluded to it, and this is going to be the giant pink elephant in the room for all of this All-Star stuff, is how many of these guys actually want to participate in it.
When they get there, I think they'll participate. Like, I don't think anybody's going to go Rasheed Wallace. Do you remember the year Rasheed Wallace was a replacement player? I think he was in like the Dominican or something, and he was already on vacation. They said, "Hey man, we need you as a reserve to come in." And he came in. I think he only shot one-handed. Like he just let it be known. I don't think anybody's going to pull a full Rasheed. So I think once these guys get there, I mean, you got guys that are ambassadors.
Well, but will they actually show up though? Is my question? Because
they'll show up, of course.
All I'm saying is that it wouldn't necessarily shock me if LeBron tweaked a hammy.
Oh,
in the game before.
Here's the thing: LeBron, Steph, I guess those guys mainly. I think they understand the responsibility they have to the league. I'm looking around. I'm at KD, Kyrie. Yeah, maybe those guys. I could see a tight hamstring popping up on one of those guys. But I don't know. We'll probably have a better sense of that a couple weeks from now. Where I wanted to go before we got out of here was we look at these five guys. We say, okay, KD and LeBron. You want to give me who you think is the LeBron squad? Who are the LeBron guys on this list, and who are the KD guys?
All right.
You know what I really like is Steph. Who's going to take Steph? LeBron, KD? Is he the last pick? Like, what happens to Steph?
Well, he can't be the last pick because Jokic is going to be the last pick.
You think? I'm curious about that too. I'm curious where Jokic goes. Could be last.
So I think Kawhi's the first pick.
Okay.
Giannis is the second pick.
Really? See, I don't think Giannis is the second pick.
Well, who goes above him? Well, I think Katie picks Kyrie. Katie picks Kyrie first.
Kyrie, yeah, you're right. You got to keep that locker room happy.
And then,
I wouldn't be surprised if Embiid goes next and Beal right after him. Like, you get the shooters. And then all like Jokic, Giannis, Steph, Luka, those guys need the ball. Well, LeBron and KD don't want to give him the ball. So,
I mean, Kawhi's going to go top. Like, he's going to be a top 4 or 5 pick.
Oh, no, Kawhi. I had him up there. Kawhi, that's what I'm saying. Kawhi, Kyrie, I think, Bradley Beal, those guys will go, and Embiid. I think those guys will go quick.
I think, oh man, it's tough. Man, I don't know. I would probably I think Steph's the last pick.
I think he might be. Steph, Luka, and Jokic are all going to be fighting for last pick.
Angry Warriors Twitter is going to be about this?
I can't wait for it. I wish that this was televised.
All right. Last little note on this, and it's a Lakers-specific thing, but I host Locked on Lakers, so you guys are stuck with it. I think it's really interesting that Anthony Davis is not a starter as the second-best player on a Lakers team that won a championship last year. Now, yes, he's dealing with injuries, but so is Kawhi Leonard. But in terms of fan vote and those things, it's really fascinating to me that AD didn't get more support behind him from a gigantic Lakers fan base.
So LeBron does, man. He turns everybody against the second star. LeBron had no help. He got an MVP because he carried this team. The team had nothing but hot garbage, what everybody wanted everyone to think. And AD was saying, all the fans were like, you know what? Not AD. LeBron's doing it all himself. AD, we can't even vote for him, man. It's what happened.
It's as good a theory as any.
Ask out, AD. Ask out. It's time. Get out now.
The Get Out poster is going to be Anthony Davis. All right, that's going to do it for this segment here. When we come back, Adam is going to give us his top. How many artists are we talking about here?
Well, I always do top five if you're
all right.
The show,
so top like five Anthony artists plus some honorable mentions and an explanation for how he's defining an artist in the first place. So when we come back, we're going to listen to Prince. Today's show is brought to you in part by BuiltBar.com. Head on over to Built Bar. Use that promo code LOCKEDON for a 20% discount on your next order of the best protein bars you can possibly get. Adam, we have both been enjoying this coconut puff bar. It tastes to me exactly like a Mound bar. It's so good.
I think it's like even better. It's like a Mounds and Oreo mixed together. I'm telling you, it's so good. I'm out. I already ate them all.
What's great about it though is that like it's a Mound bar that doesn't give me the guilty feeling as soon as I eat it.
Oh, of course. That's what's great about them. Yeah.
Yeah.
You metabolize them so quickly.
It's made with a premium collagen protein blend, 16 grams of protein, 130 calories, only 6 grams of sugar. It's gluten-free, preservative-free, and unfortunately, it's a limited time only. So make sure you get in on this as soon as you possibly can. Again, that is BuiltBar.com. Use that promo code LOCKEDON for a 20% discount on your next order. Not your first, but your next. So you can continue to use that promo code LOCKEDON however many times you head back to the website to get either it's this coconut puff bar or any of the fabulous flavors that they have there. One more time, that's BuiltBar.com, promo code LOCKEDON. All right, Adam, we both have our berets on. Explain to me how you're defining artistry in the NBA.
Well, and it's kind of difficult to define really, but just a player that plays with an artistry, you know, has either an appreciation or a natural, ability to make the game beautiful, to play it in a unique way, to where beauty and grace seem to take over for maybe
like
just
my
like,
hosting, right?
It is. You are definitely the artist of this team for sure. You're absolutely an artist. You're like when the
I love it when I say something that like just so clearly jars you.
I had a comeback, but it was a little too harsh. That's like I better not. No, but you just like, you know, I think Allen Iverson was an artist. I think Kobe Bryant was an artist. Michael Jordan was an artist. You know, George Gervin, Magic Johnson had an artistry to him. A lot of greats. But what it is, you know, inventing the game in a new way, playing it through a new way and a way that is there's just something beautiful to it, even if it's not necessary. Manu Ginobili, I think, was an artist. Akeem Olajuwon was an artist. So
Facundo Campazzo is an artist.
Campazzo, right? Is. He's not quite, you know, he hasn't been in the league quite long enough, and he's not quite big, you know, enough of a player, but he would be the type of guy.
He throws nothing but no-look passes.
Teodosic, I think, is like, he was in the league a little bit. He's like an artist. And it's not just great passers. I mean, you think about guys that really invent new ways to score. Dirk, even, I think, a bit of an artist. Gilbert Arenas, an artist. So, you know, there's that. That's kind of what I mean. We did talk about you could almost split guys into three sections, and players are usually some combination of this. But there's an artist, there's a scientist, where maybe there's not so much art to it, but it's just effective. It's like, hey, a very technical way to approach the game. Tim Duncan, probably a scientist more than an artist. And then you have a force of nature, and I think Zion would be that. Like, there's a little artistry to the way he plays basketball, but more than anything, he's just a force of nature. So that's how I would describe it. So now, without further ado, are you ready for the honorable mentions?
Absolutely.
Bubble Murray. Not Jamal Murray. Bubble Murray. Jamal Murray, not an artist, but Bubble Murray was like – I think it was the most artistic expression of basketball that we saw inside of the bubble. I mean that sincerely. He had the 360 layups. He had the up and under over LeBron. He had the step. He just had so many like gorgeous basketball plays. that he gets on that list for me. Carmelo Anthony is an artist. I think the way he plays basketball is just so, like, I mean, it's like Mozart. It's just so technically gorgeous. But Luca,
can I actually really quickly say an important aspect to this artistry is almost like a stubbornness to, like, stand by your art, you know?
Sure. There's a lot of stubborn players on this list for sure.
Yeah, it's you know, sometimes it's endearing, sometimes it's infuriating, but regardless, that player, you know, refuses to, you know, abide what the sport demands of them. It's incredible. I love this category. You texted it to me, and I legitimately, like, told, you know, it's like, oh my god, I love this one. This is a good
one. I get lucky every now and then. Luca, I think Luca has a bit of an artistry to him. You know, he's got some great passes. He's a unique player. He's a very unique style. But it's kind of stock kind of low even on the artist scale right now.
Yeah,
John Morant. John Morant, more of a force of nature than anything, but there's an artistry to the way he sort of throws his body at the rim. You know, he just kind of launches his body without a plan so often, and then just figures the plan out as he goes. And it's
just beautiful. Think like those artists who, like, grab big amounts of paint and just chucks it at the wall, kind of thing. And it somehow produces, like, this really emotional, you know, beautiful thing that really, like, forces you to feel a certain way. I love that about Ja.
Well, speaking of make you feel a certain type of way, I think Russell Westbrook is that type of player. I mean, he's like pure emotion and adrenaline expressed, you know, like an artistic expression of anger and like, you know, intensity on the basketball court. Trae Young, I think, has an artistry to him as well, but he's also, and then Derrick Rose, I think Derrick Rose, if you think about this, Derrick Rose plays the point guard position unlike anybody else. Like, he is a form. You would compare a player to a Derrick Rose the way he sort of shifts. So I think there's that. Chris Paul, I put this question out on Twitter, and a lot of people said Chris Paul. He didn't make my top five, and maybe I'm wrong on that. You could let me know, you know, hit me up on Twitter. But he's more of a scientist to me than an artist. He's a little bit of both. He's a little bit of both. But to me, there's just a technicalness to the way he plays the game that the top five guys above him, I think it's different.
I think young Chris Paul, more of an artist. As he got older, he became a lot more technical and more scientific than he was earlier in his career.
Maybe. Well, early Lob City. Yeah, I could see it. All right. Are you ready for my top five? There's really
Jamal Crawford needs to go on this list of, like, all-time artist. Huh?
What team is he on?
Oh, you're talking about the all-time. I'm just saying, like, you know, you were talking about, like, older players who played with some artistry to him. Crawford is up there for me. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
So my top five here, number five, I have James Harden. Don't always love the way he plays. You could argue that there's a technical aspect to it. I mean, he is the analytics ball player. You know, he is the ultimate. But I do think that the way he also invented a new style of basketball that nobody else has played to the degree that he's played it. And, you know, his footwork, a wide variety of moves that he has and the different things he's able to do with ease. I think he's an artist. Whether you like him or hate him.
I err closer to the second of those things, but, like, I think a lot of people are going to ask you, like, hey, if Doncic is not an artist, then how is Harden an artist? And I think the fact that Harden came first to me makes him more of an artist, whereas Doncic is a little bit more scientific in that, like, he's utilizing a lot of those same things that make Harden so efficient.
But also Doncic, part of what makes him so effective is his size, in a way that with Harden too. I mean, he's a really stocky, strong
player now,
and he's 6'5", whatever, but Doncic, you know, it just takes a little bit less almost because he's so good at using his body to gain a little bit of that finishing touch around the rim. Whereas James Harden, I think just the moves they're quicker. They're a little bit more, you know, schoolyard. And so he gets it for me. The next guy, there's like layers to that. I think this is actually a list that has, sometimes I'm like 1 through 5, it's hard. You could argue me. I think this list is in the appropriate order, in my opinion.
King?
The next one is a rookie. It's LaMelo Ball. It's a rookie. I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but LaMelo Ball plays the game unlike anybody else. He really does. He plays he is inventing a new style of basketball. There's been pieces of it. He's standing on the shoulders of other even greater players that have played, you know, that have given him little pieces, but just the way he throws the ball, the way he runs, the way he attacks the basket, the way he shoots, everything about his game is unique. But at least at the very moment, he's playing it like an artist. He's the new artist on the scene that we're like, oh, wow, look at this, a whole new sound, a whole new sound to him.
If Lonzo hadn't preceded him, would we be talking about LaMelo as like one of the more interesting rookies to come along in quite some time?
I think some
who have been able to separate themselves, but I'm saying like the general understanding or the general analysis, the popular analysis of him, I think would really change if Lonzo hadn't come first.
I don't think it's Lonzo. I think it's Charlotte. I mean, we're talking about Lonzo going to a Lakers, you know, shoe stores being sold out, got lines around the block before he ever played a single game, a single summer league game, even going from that much buzz and craze. And we kind of used up a lot of energy on the Ball family. And then for him to be in Charlotte and doing this thing where he's still great enough that everybody's kind of tuning in, or a lot of people are tuning in, but I just think it's the, and maybe even in a good way, an appropriate amount of attention on him for him to sort of have the, because remember his first 10 games or so weren't that great. You know, he was struggling to find his footing, and now he's got it. So, but he's pretty close to must see TV for me already. Just in that he's kind of like, whenever these artists arrive, whether it's Iverson or Jordan or Kobe or whatever, they tend to have more influence on the players because they're doing something that everybody's kind of watching going, ooh, I didn't think to do it that way, but I'm going to try to copy that. And I wonder if LaMelo Ball plays a style like that, where I'm watching it and I'm going like, ooh, I'm looking at basketball through new eyes.
That's a really cool way of putting it. All right, what's the next one?
Number three, Nikola Jokic.
I was just waiting like where he was. So basically, do you sit there every week and find a power ranking where you can put Jokic in the top five somehow?
Every good thing. Like, I just don't know what to say.
What's the next one going to be like? Like top five kind of chubby 7-footers who can shoot.
Well, yeah, for real. Exactly. top five Balkans. We're going there. Let's go.
No, but like for the sake of this category, I thought he was going to be higher, to be completely honest.
I honestly think number one and two are like, they're definitive, but all right. Jokic to me is also definitively number three in this way. Like, first of all, what's his closest comp of all time? Like, I'm open to anything because he doesn't have one. I think Larry Bird is honestly his closest comp, but he's a center. Larry Bird is a forward. They're different personalities. Like, obviously, Larry Bird, a 3-time champion, you know, all the accolades that, and Jokic would be lucky to get close to any of those. But I hear people say Bill Walton. I'm like, I don't, you know, no. Game was so different. Skill sets were different. They passed, I mean, a little bit. Arvydas Sabonis, not really.
Young Sabonis was what I was thinking.
Sabonis just so much more. Yeah, but I'm telling you, Sabonis, and part of this was just because the nature of basketball. Like, you have to have a new, you have to have someone do something new that makes everyone realize that maybe that was possible. But Sabonis just much more of a stationary player, whether that was the elbow or the block, and those were the two spots he operated most, or the very top of the key. But it was stationary. Even Powell, I mean, a little bit, but I guess we're just going to throw out every white European center and just see which one.
I'm trying to think, like.
The point is, there's nobody that is that close to him. Like, if you said Kobe,
Rashid's kind of a fun one.
But not really. Again, not really. And that's my point. Jokic, you know, inventing new styles of basketball, new brands of basketball that are already coming on, just more and more teams trying to leverage their bigs in different roles, and bigs saying like, hey, maybe I can dribble and pass and do this stuff and trying things out. But number one, Jokic, there's a video of all of his game winners, and there's a lot of them, his go-ahead buckets in the final 30 seconds or whatever, and almost every single one of is just ugly as hell. Like, you look at it and you go, like, what's that release point? Like, what's he doing? And that's just his game.
The ball, like, leaves the camera view.
He holds the ball in weird ways. He passes it in weird ways. He shoots it in weird ways. He just does weird stuff, and to me, there's an artistry to it. He'll be a guy with 6 turnovers, and next 2 turnovers in a row, next time down, he'll throw it over his head for no reason. He'll be like, and he just can't help himself. He's an artist on the court.
Something I'm realizing as part of your list, or like the definition of artists, is that like all of these guys, you have to be able to refer to them by one name, or like
my list is definitely all one name guys. So there is that. There might be something to it. The last thing I'll say on Jokic is, and this hasn't caught on mainstream quite yet, but he has invented a shot There's not many guys that have
the Sambor shuffle.
The Sambor shuffle. He's from Sambor, Serbia, a little tiny town in Serbia. So the Sambor shuffle. He's a right-handed shooter. He shuffles, like literally shuffles his feet to the right, takes one dribble as he shuffles, and mm-hmm. jumps off his right leg and shoots a right one-legged fadeaway off his right leg. And like he's phenomenal at it. And it's actually sneaky effective. It throws the defense off. It kind of puts him at an off angle where you can't really block it. And I'm so curious to see. He's not quite popular enough for people to copy it, but I'm really curious if there's going to be any other players that ever attempt to take the Sambor shuffle the way they took the Dirk one-legged fadeaway.
Yeah, it's such a counterintuitive shot because you're jumping off of the same leg that you're releasing your, you know, it's a right leg, right, you know, yeah, right foot, right hand shot. And it's such a difficult shot that like you would have to go out of your way to really master it in the same way that I, you know, I don't know if people would be comfortable enough taking it. Also, like my thing with Jokic, and this applies to a lot of the guys, but more so Jokic than the other ones, is he seems to have a lot of like F it, I'm trying it.
Exactly. Moves. And that's maybe the most core tenet of the artist in basketball. Yeah. Is the like, I'm just going to try. So many guys go into the lab and they work on, okay, I'm going to work on this move or that move. It's like a move in a textbook that they're studying. The artists, they're like, let me just try some crazy stuff. Nobody's ever tried a right legged shot. Let's try that.
Well, like he's like for no reason, sometimes you'll see him shoot the ball with an arc that like I joked earlier, but the ball will leave the picture for like a full second because he shot the ball so straight up in the air. And then you'll see it just like fall back down to the basket. And it's like, you know, you could have gotten away with a little extra arc, but you didn't need to have it like bring down rain.
Right.
Literally. Totally. But he just does it. You know, I just felt like it.
Number two on my list is Steph Curry. I think he has to go on this list. I mean, you talk about guys that invented a new brand of basketball. Just the idea of just jacking up insanely contested three-pointers or three-pointers from so far behind the arc or three-pointers mm-hmm. off of any type of balance, doesn't matter. Figure it out once you get in the air. That's him and his incredible handle, you know, some all-time great, I'm driving into traffic, I don't know what I'm doing, and then something beautiful comes of it. Even getting three-pointers off, how many iconic plays do we have where he's eight dribbles where you're like, what the heck is he doing? All of a sudden he's going into shooting motion and it's nothing but net. I think Steph Curry is a true, true basketball artist.
I think the way that he shoots, because it's so different from your typical like beautiful jumper, you know, the fact that he shoots it, you know, from kind of his hip, right? It looks like he's just bang and the ball's out of his hands, you know, and the fact that it's so different and yet so effective and he's so good at it. And he's so just so thoroughly revolutionized the sport and what we thought was capable as a shooter, right? This notion that actually shooting a 30, 35 footer is a good shot.
Right.
You know,
and it is. And now it is because guys have learned. And that's what I mean. He thought to try it out because of his talent. Yeah. And now it's just second nature and it's a part of basketball. That's a true artist.
And then on top of that, phenomenal passer, really good at handling the ball, an incredible finisher around the rim. All
creative finisher,
yeah. All right, so who's number one for you? Because there's somebody on my mind right now that you I don't think have mentioned even in your honorable mentions that I'm kind of curious about. But all right, let's hear it. Who's number one?
For me, it's Kyrie Irving.
Okay, yeah, because all right, so he's number one. That makes sense.
The number one artist. In fact, so when we talk about the triangle, because like Kevin Durant was the guy that wasn't in LeBron James, those guys to me, like Kevin Durant is an artist, a scientist, and a force of nature. He's like the very center of that triangle. He's a little bit of all of it. LeBron James, more of a force of nature and a scientist than an artist, but he's a little bit of all of it. Kyrie Irving, I think, is almost entirely artist. Definitely not a scientist. Definitely not a scientist. Not really a force of nature.
Well, he's anti-science, so it kind of makes sense.
But I mean, even like some of the stuff he does is like, you know, we inefficient or whatever. You know, the nerds don't like it, and you look at this or that or whatever. But and the same goes for force of nature. You know, he's pretty small, average point guard height, maybe even on the small side. He's pretty quick with the basketball, but he's not Russell Westbrook. You know, force of nature. He is almost pure scientist, pure skill. And the way he uses and applies that skill is just so fascinating. I mean, he's one of those guys that has, how many players can you say have successfully pulled off a move that nobody in history has ever pulled off? And I think Kyrie has probably pulled off like 30 moves that nobody else has before or since replicated. It just came out of his own creative sort of stream of conscious playing.
At least 4 or 5 times a game, he'll have a finish around the rim that I'll just be like, how did you even think to try that?
How did you think to try it is a great way to put it. Because it's not how did you try it, it's how did you even come up with that? Like, we're going to try this thing.
And then you know, you're talking about like some of the moves that he's made that nobody else has made. The maybe the most critical shot in the history of basketball, right, was his step back going to his right, the three-point range. Most step backs, like historically speaking, have been going to the ball handler's offhand, right? This is a strong hand step back going from three-point range, biggest shot of that game, and he cans it. And it was it took down like one of the best teams of all time. And as soon as he released it, I'm sure a lot of people, vast majority of people are like, oh man, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. And then every time he shoots that shot now, that's a good look.
Yeah. I mean, he's a true artist. He's very much an Iverson type artist to me, where it's the form outweighs the function in a way that, like, I do wonder if the NBA, the average NBA fan experience has moved too far into the, like, you know,
scientific,
the scientific aspect of it, of like, hey, we really want to look at the numbers and we want to get into this. And like, Iverson would have been hated, man, if he played in this era. I mean, there have been so many guys talking about how better than Eric Snow when you look at the on off differential. It's like, all right, we're losing something here. Because
Twitter with Allen Iverson right now would be, I don't think I would be able to exist on Twitter if I'd be told like I have to not like Allen Iverson.
But I think the artistry is a thing that fans just can stop and appreciate a little bit about it. I mean, we were joking about this earlier in our group chat. I know this stuff annoys you. We overthink things sometimes. And it was became very clear last year inside the bubble. The Lakers had LeBron and AD, and we kept trying to talk ourselves into all this other stuff. Sometimes the game is simple. And especially when we overemphasize, you know, like we all try to play the GM and the coach and what plays can they run and the effectiveness. We focus so much on that, and the game actually gets really simple sometimes when you really get into that too far. But there is an artistry that can just be like, you know what's fun? Watching Kyrie do this move that I've never seen before and come up with it on the fly. And I don't care if it's effective. I don't care if it's replicable. I don't care if he had a wide open guy on the wing. It just was a beautiful moment and a beautiful expression of basketball that I want to appreciate. And that part of the game, that's why I wanted to do this one. That part of the game is I feel like it's fading a little bit. The appreciation for it is fading.
I agree. I mean, in sports in general, right? Entertainment is giving way to competition and organizations, teams, players, whatever. The things that we value in sports are all based off of what scientifically, analytically gives teams the best chance of winning. Whereas like we just keep... It's okay for stars to just sit games because it gives them a better chance of winning a championship later in the year. Entertainment is just kind of given way to that line of thinking. And I completely agree. Guy that went unmentioned here though, Dame. You don't have Dame on your list.
I think Dame is a little bit, you know, more in the like scientist artist, like he's a little bit more
kind of like the Luka to
a little
Dame,
bit,
you know, Luka is to Harden what Dame is to Steph kind of thing.
A little bit, but also like, you know, some of the Damian, this has nothing to do with the player. This guy, Kyrie's not the greatest player in the NBA. This is by no means just that. I'm just letting the audience know. With Dame, I think what some of what he does, he pulls up, you know, the logo threes and things like that, which are pretty spectacular. But it's what he does is a lot of really good basketball, you know, coming off of the screen with great footwork and going into it. And it's great. It's a little more technical to me than of a Steph, who just seems a little bit more like chaos on a basketball court.
Yeah. No. I'm it's your
a little
list.
More of a little more. I'd just say he's a little more on the
scientist. I just thought we had to mention him because of the, you know, the other guys that we've mentioned through.
I think he's a little more on the scientist side of things than the artist, but you know, he has artistry to him as well for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the two kind of go hand in hand because the art doesn't really take place. It's like Jason Williams, right? Was a fantastic artist, but the science wasn't there to back up what he was doing from a results standpoint.
I think music is the best example of this. Like you can get people who are technically brilliant guitarists.
Eric Clapton.
No, they work at Guitar Center or something. You know, like they're really good at it, but they're not an artist. Like, okay, like, hey man, like you're just like, wow, this guy is an incredible guitar player. And then you have artists who maybe aren't great. Bob Dylan, not a great singer. He's not one of the best singers, but he's a pure artist. Like, understands the art on a level most people never get to. So there's a differentiation there that Damian Lillard, I think, obviously fantastic player, but I think more of a in-between scientist and artist.
I could get high and talk about this all day long, but the show has to end at some point. So that's going to do it for this episode and this week's episode of the Locked On NBA podcast. Make sure you guys are tuning in, not just to this feed, which we got you guys covered Monday through Friday, but across the entire Locked On NBA, MLB, NFL, NCAA basketball, NCAA football, all of your favorite teams, hockey, we have you guys covered. So again, please enjoy the rest of your week. Adam and I will be back next Friday to talk to you guys about whatever his next list is. Oh, I think, what do we agree on? Your next list is going to be...
I don't know. We changed. We don't decide till Friday. So
that's I had the thing that I was going
to
ask.
We don't decide till Friday. Have a great weekend, everybody. Be safe. Be good to everyone. We'll see you next week.